history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some pretty incredible stories in your neighborhood if you take the time to listen to members of our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we do so, we sure do learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and a lot of times inspired by these stories. Sometimes we're just downright amazed. It's just hard to believe some of the coincidences we come across. And we're definitely coming across one of those here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at the Military Museum with over 100 military vehicles. I guess if you're going to find a vehicle you drove in World War II, you come to a military museum with vehicles. But we're going to hear the story of how this unfolded from 91-year-old Tom Grasser of Albuquerque, New Mexico, but originally from Kenosha, Wisconsin.
That's correct.
What was it like growing up in Kenosha, Wisconsin in the 30s and 40s?
I tell you, I was more fortunate than most. My dad had a job during the Depression. Those were tough times for a lot of people, and God bless them. We came out of them. I lived right on Lake Michigan. In fact, our home was just on the backwaters of the harbor. They always used to say we could probably swim before we could walk.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of the way it was. Anyhow, we had a good life. Don't ever realize that it was as tough for my parents to keep us going. We took it for granted. Of course, didn't have the cell phones and all that the kiddos have now, but used to play outside a lot, which was nice. We had patched up clothes, but they're clean. I went to school in a Catholic school, and of course, not I'm not going to say mean, but they were kind of tough. They're tough girls, but they're wonderful, and they gave us a good education. And for that, I'm very thankful. I've been very blessed.
Well, when you mention that, I guess the question I have to ask to really get a sense and perspective when you talk about the nuns being tough, I mean, you were in the Army in World War II. Who was tougher, the nuns or the drill sergeants?
I think the nuns were.
I had a feeling you might say that. And I can tell you're from Wisconsin because you're wearing a Brett Favre Packers wristwatch. You don't find those too many places in Albuquerque. Do you remember, I know it's a long time ago, but as a boy, before World War II, do you remember what kind of dreams or ambitions, ideas you had about your future?
Gee whiz, that's a tough one. Going to Catholic school, all us boys thought we were going to be priests. But you got to be pretty intelligent to get a job like that. And I wasn't the smartest kid in the class. In fact, until I got to fourth grade, I didn't realize I couldn't see.
Really?
We used to go to Mass every morning in a Catholic school in those days. That was the first order of the day. The candles on the altar would look like big fuzzballs to me.
Huh.
And finally, in the fourth grade, the nun said, Tom, I don't think you can see. And, I didn't know. And sure enough, they went and had my eyes checked, and I didn't need glasses. Going to Mass, and after I got my glasses, I could see the wick, and the candle, the flame. And I looked down the road, and I could see signs and things that were just blurred.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a little better in school after that.
I suppose so, and it makes a big difference, although it probably did ruin your future as a football referee. I mean, that was probably out the window.
Gone. It was gone.
One question I like to ask every veteran, because it seems like everybody who was alive then has a specific memory about this day. December 7th, 1941. You remember that day?
Yeah.
You remember how you found out?
Yeah, I was sitting in the balcony of the Orpheum Theater in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I had a little girlfriend, and we were actually necking in the balcony. And, of course, came this. Mm. And we could not believe it. The time was early afternoon, I guess it was, on a Sunday. Going into service or something, I was never on, didn't even consider it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd finished World War I just, a few years before.
Yeah.
And for us to be going to war again, I could not believe it. I was in the theater. I don't remember the movie that was played, but I do remember where I was.
Well, and after your description, we know why you don't remember the movie that was played.
What can I say?
Was there an immediate desire to do something about it, to get involved in the service, or did that take a while?
I tell you, patriotism in the United States at that time, and especially right after that, was unbelievable. Everybody got behind the war effort. Women, they used to have a job as teachers and secretaries and nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them were pretty well housekeepers. When the war came along and all the men went into service, a lot of them that were old enough, these ladies jumped in, and God bless them. If it wasn't for them, we couldn't have done the job that we were able to do. The farmers, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, had scrap drives. It's unbelievable, the patriotism, and I'm sure we still got it. Everybody was behind us. Mm-hmm. In the States. And to get to it, back to what you asked, I thought I'd go in the Navy. I figured that'd be a good, clean place and be able to do something. So I was a junior in high school, went to join up for the Navy, and I wore glasses. And they said, well, we won't take you because you wear glasses. He says, but the Army will take you. I said, well, they're going to have to draft me. And so I finished out my high school graduation anyhow, ended up not at the head of the class, but we got out June the 11th, 1943. June the 17th, we were sworn in the Army.
Wow.
And we had a week, well, until the 1st of July, to get our house in order. Got on a train in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and of course they took us out to Fort Ord, California.
Mm-hmm.
Told us that we're going to be ambulance drivers. I didn't know how to drive. My mother had been killed in an automobile accident when I was 11.
Mm.
My dad never drove again.
Wow.
And I tore up, I'm sure, a transmission or two trying to learn how to drive an ambulance. But they got the job done. And I always tell a story, and nobody's older than me, so they can't dispute it. But we trained in the Redwood Forest and also in Big Sur out in California. And I said, there's probably still some marks on those Redwood Forest trees that I did with my bumper on, in the ambulance.
I thought you were going to tell me the one with the hole through the trunk. You put it there.
Well, but no, that one was done already. Otherwise, uh-huh, I'd have given it a good shot.
I got to ask you in all seriousness, because as you described that, that's your life history, your mother dying when you're 11 and your father not driving again. But was it emotionally difficult for you to take that on because that had been such a weighty issue in your family?
I'll tell you a little funny story. I don't know why me, but I used to make the oatmeal. We always had oatmeal to go to school. The kids would have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood on a stool and made oatmeal. Sometimes it'd be running, sometimes it'd be chunky, but by golly, they got out of the house with a warm tummy anyhow. And we had 8 children. I remember we had one bathroom, and one of the kids would wash in the sink. The other one would be in a tub washing, and then we had a little dresser with towels and washcloths in, and we had a pan on there that we'd wash in there. So 3 of them going at one time, and they moved them out. I came from a German family, and, you know, snap, snap, snap.
Yeah, the assembly line going.
You got it.
Yeah. You had 7 siblings, is what you're saying.
That's correct.
How many of you ended up in the service?
I'm going to go back a little bit when my mom had the baby. In those days, a lady would be in bed for maybe, I don't know, I'm going to lie to you now, but 5 or 6 weeks or
sure.
While we'd have a housekeeper would come in and cook for us and clean house and get us off, you know, and all. And Mrs. Hansen was a lady that had been there for the baby, and my dad went and talked to her. She had a good job. She had a little old lady she was cooking for and 2 bachelor sons that were growing. Mrs. Reichert's lived on 5th Avenue in Kenosha. My dad went down there, and she told Mrs. Hansen, George Grasher's got a house full of kiddos. He needs you. We hate to see you go, but you better go with him. And that's the way it was.
Hmm.
And, of course, after a year, she became my mom. And I, one thing, women have always played a good part in my life. I tell you, they've been good to me. And I had a wonderful mother and a wonderful stepmother. And I hate to use the word step, but she was a real lady and a love. And, of course, they used to call me a brown noser because I tried to please her all the time. But I was so pleased, and I was smart enough at the time to know that. We were blessed to have her. It ended up why, to answer your question, there's three from our original family went in, and two from her family.
Wow.
So we had five of us in there.
And y'all came home?
Yeah. Three of us went overseas. My oldest brother, or stepbrother, was a Marine, and he went to the Pacific. My other brother, stepbrother, went in the Air Force. I was going to say Corps. That's what we called it at that time.
Yep.
He stayed stateside. And, of course, my brother George, the oldest one of the Grassers, was OMP. And
okay.
They had a prisoner of war camp over in Racine, which is right next door to Kenosha. And he was a guard there. I went in the medical corps and drove ambulance and came home on our vacation before we went overseas. And my older brother Dick was frozen on his job. He worked for McWhite Wire and Rope, and it was a war job. So he was frozen on his job. And when I came home just before we went overseas, went back, told his boss, he says, my kid brother's going overseas. And he says, I'm in better shape than him, and also I got to go. So Dick went and signed up, was in the 35th Division. He went overseas. He was a forward scout, and he got hit pretty bad with shrapnel in his back and arm. Pardon me.
Sure.
He lost his right arm.
Wow.
And pretty well tore up. But my oldest brother, stepbrother, he got shot in the legs over in the Pacific. I was told that they had wooden bullets, and they'd hit, and then they'd splinter.
Right.
And so his legs were pretty well shot up. I did get a scratch.
But you saw a lot of guys who did. And I've got to follow up on that with your brother Dick. Sounds like you're saying he didn't have to go. He had an exemption with his job. And the only reason he went, because you were going, and he felt bad for not going if you were going.
That's it. That's
and then
it.
He gets hit.
Yep.
Yeah. And probably pretty close to where you were if he was in the 35th Infantry Division.
Actually, I found out where he was. I told my CO, well, not CO, my platoon leader, I said, my brother Dixon was in the 7th Army Hospital. And he says, he's at such and such a place. And right now, I can't even tell you where it was. And I said, I'd like to take a load over there. And he said, by all means. When I got there, a fellow, Richard Schultz, lived across the street from us in Kenosha, was a company clerk for this hospital. Went to see him, and he said, they flew him out yesterday.
Oh.
Just missed him. I said, well, how was he? He says, well, he's doing fine. And first time that it ever soaked in on me that he was hit kind of bad. He says, I don't think he's going to lose his arm. And he did, but I did not know that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We had so many that, you know, it'd be little wounds, big wounds, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it just never crossed my mind.
Mm.
But, yeah, he was a good guy.
And we haven't even scratched the surface of your story yet, but it occurs to me that if there's anybody who really understands the price of freedom with your family and what you witnessed, you're probably that guy.
Well, I'm a rich man. just honestly didn't think, I don't think anyone thought they'd come back.
What were you thinking when you went over? Because you're just a teenager, right?
Yeah. It was a job we had to do, and of course, we had such good backing from all the people back here. It was the thing you did. There was no question about it. You were going to do what you could. Every one of these people went over, they did what they were trained to do, and they did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
We really had esprit de corps for the U.S. We were proud of our country, and we had every right to be because we're a good country then, and we're still a good country.
And Mr. Grasser picked a good spot to settle after the war. If he hadn't ended up in New Mexico, an incredible reunion likely wouldn't have unfolded more than 7 decades later. We're going to hear about that, about the work he did as an ambulance driver overseas, and what it was like for this young man, not even 21 years old, to come face-to-face with the tragedy of not one, but two Nazi concentration camps. Check out photos and video of Mr. Grasser on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country, and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.